Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Cuck My Life podcast. Thank you for joining us. This is where we talk everything cuckold, real stories, real guests, and real cucks. I'm the Po' Boy, and I'm joined by my good friends and fellow cucks, Hopeful,
Hubs the Hot Wife,
and the Aussie Cuck. And today we have a very special guest, Mistress K, aka the Headstrong Hot Wife. She's an amazing person, and we're going to talk about who she is and kind of how she defines herself and those kind of things. Check it out.
Boundaries are the gifts that we can give our partners to create a safe space to play in.
I just watched your ass get slapped 10 times by that guy when you were riding his dick.
Surprise penises are never good. I mean, honestly.
This morning, I'm not going down on her. I'm going down on a toilet.
And then we're grappling and we're wrestling and we're trying to pin the other one.
Cleaned my dick off. I changed the condom off my strap on and started fucking her.
Pain that feels good. And people know what that sensation is like.
Good day, everybody. How are we doing today?
Couldn't be better, Paul. Thanks for hosting.
Yeah, no, great. It's evening here, so you know, kids are in bed, wife's out with boyfriend. It's quiet.
All right.
Real cucks, man.
Right on. Mistress K, how are you today?
I'm good. It is awesome. Not the evening where I am, so I have some coffee.
Good deal. So one of the things that I find fascinating about you is that you have a little kind of way to describe yourself and where you fit in the lifestyle. And I wondered if you could kind of tell us that.
Oh, you want to hear my little spiel that I start my moan rooms with?
Yes, I do. I do.
Okay, we do. Hold on. Believe it or not, I actually have to read that every time. Hi, my name is Mistress K, and my pronouns are she, her. I am a hot wife, cuckoldress, dom, primal, and an FLR. I am non-monogamous, bi-curious, and heteroromantic. I'm a proud slut sister, a curious kinkster, a sexual health advocate, and a lifestyle blogger. You can find me on my blog, headstronghotwife.com, on X or Twitter or whatever we're calling it these days, at headstronghw, and at Instagram at headstronghotwife. And if you want to support me, my blog, or any of the rooms I do on Moan, you can buy me a coffee at headstronghw. How's that?
that's exactly it. And
that's wonderful.
The thing,
it made me want to buy you a coffee.
Yep, would be a good time.
The thing that fascinates me is I feel like this is something you've probably, like, how did you kind of get to where you could fill out all those spaces, you know? And
well, the non-monogamous was the easy part. Bi-curious is probably the most recognizable. I would say I'm more bi-situational than bi-curious because I'm not just going to do something because I'm curious about it. I will do something because of the person. If anything, it's more pan-curious than bi-curious. So I may have to change that up. And heteroromantic, I know that I am only romantically attracted to members of the opposite sex. And specifically, I have learned that I'm only really romantically attracted to cis-hetero men. And that's not to say that that can't change, because I really do believe that sexuality is far more fluid than we give credit for. So for all these labels and all of these kind of monikers and things that I've got on here, I could probably just wipe them all away and say, I'm evolving. Because at the end of the day, we're all learning, we're all still evolving in our sexuality, in our life, and, you know, in our curiosity. What I am, you know, those are the things that I said I am. And then the other stuff is a lot of just kind of more of what I do, you know, being a proud slut sister. You guys know the definition of slut as taught to us by Salacious Scarlet and Princess Anya, now Angie, of the Slut Sisters group, you know, it's sexually liberated, unshamed, and transformed. So, you know, I'm certainly that, so I will proudly kind of call myself a Slut Sister. Kinkster, I think that's probably what I mostly am, is a kinkster, because it's a lot of what we do in the lifestyle is a form of power exchange. And that falls very squarely under the kink umbrella. And sexual health advocate, that's something I've always been passionate about, even when I started learning about sex as a teenager. I was kind of the opinion that if you can't go in and buy your own condoms in the store, you're probably not ready to have sex, because you need to be able to take responsibility for your health and the consequences that can come from sexual activity. You know, a lot of those are good. Yay, orgasm. Fun, pleasure, all of that. But there are some that, you know, you might not be particularly ready for, or you just flat out don't want. So being able to kind of navigate the responsibilities that come with this activity that is part of being an adult. And then lifestyle blogger, I got a blog. So there's that.
But it's That'll fun. Do it.
But as far as the hot wife, cuckoldress, dom, primal, and an FLR, that really describes my relationship with my husband, the way that my own sexuality manifests, primarily as a primal. Hot wife, cuckoldress, people disagree, but this is how I tend to view the hot wife, cuckoldress, partner sharing, for lack of a better term. You know, some people want to call it asymmetrical non-monogamy, however you want to define it. I've always kind of viewed this, and when we first got into the lifestyle and I was looking at a lot of kind of media that covered hot wifing and cuckolding and things like that, they seem to fall very much on a spectrum where a lot of these memes would be the stag vixen meme seemed, where the male was the dominant or the leader, I should say, that it was more male led with a stag vixen dynamic, and it was far more female led with a cuckoldress dynamic. And hot wife really seemed to fall in the middle. Like, I would see memes that would describe hot wife as far more female led, and I would see memes that described hot wife as far more led or male led. So I started to look at it like a Kinsey spectrum, where, you know, you could look at hot wifing as this whole Kinsey spectrum with cuckolding on one side and stag vixen on the other. And most people probably fall somewhere on that spectrum of how they play. And that's the beautiful thing about sexuality, is there's all of these labels, all of these things, they're really just a jumping off point to further the conversation. Amen. So I don't mind if someone calls me a vixen. I don't mind if someone calls me a hot wife. I don't mind if someone calls me a cuckoldress, as long as their next question is, so what does that mean? And then I get to tell them how that applies to my relationship versus saying, oh, you're a hot wife, so, you know, you must go do this for your husband or something like that. Or, oh, you're a cuckoldress, so you must be looking for this specific kind of gendered racial person, you know, and your husband is this. And it's like, don't make assumptions. Let's just have a conversation. So
I have a question for you. Can you talk a little bit about your origin story? How did you and Happy Sub Hubby get into this?
Yeah, my husband and I had practiced kind of non-monogamy all through our relationship, but we didn't have a name for it. So after some really difficult conversations, after we rode the relationship escalator up and got married, had kids, we kind of came to a point where we weren't communicating as effectively as we wanted to be sexually about our desires, about what it was that we actually wanted. So we had some straightforward and frankly difficult conversations about our desires, about what we wanted, and we brought our fantasy life back. It was always a part of our fantasy life, but this became much more. And probably in about 2017, once we'd kind of gotten the desire part on track and my libido came roaring back, and you know, I hit my 40s then, and there's the fuck it 40s, and boy, did the libido come back, and here I came with that.
Amen. Yeah, similar sort of story with my wife, but yeah, it's resonating so much with me, especially the parts about kind of having like non-monogamy but not really knowing it, and just figuring that was just kind of just playing around a bit, like whatever you want to call it, but it's it kind of paves the way a little bit, I think.
And you can have some real missteps with that. We certainly did. We had some people that like woke up the next morning and everybody was like, that was awesome. And then we'd have one or two people that are like, oh, that's awful, you're a slut and a homewrecker and all this. And it's like, oh shit. I was like, okay, well, moving on. But yeah, so it was an evolution where we took it fantasy to where my husband said, no, this is actually something that I would like us to try and I would like us to do. And so there was a lot of talking before we actually did that about what it would look like. Why are we wanting this? What are we doing this for? And then it was finding the actual person. And luckily, I had, in about 2017, I had somebody that I used to date. I don't know if I want to call it dating, but I had been with sexually, but I hadn't had penetrative sex with this person prior to being with my husband. So he was kind of the always the what if, you know, and the fantasy guy. And then I reconnected with him after like 20 years. So he ended up being my first playmate because it was somebody that I knew I had chemistry with. And, you know, when we reconnected, we found out that chemistry was still there. And I was able to have a very honest conversation with him about what it was that I wanted. And he was willing to give it a go. And we're still really good friends. So
that's awesome.
It was a great experience. So that's, and so once we had that experience, we kind of dove in and never looked back. Because it was so positive. And then we've just navigated the speed bumps as they've come.
That's the key. Communicating with your partner and being on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and look, everyone's going to make mistakes. Everyone's going to make some fuck-ups, and it's, you know, it's never someone's fault specifically. It's just the miscommunication, misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm. And luckily, I have a really amazing husband who kind of keeps all of that in perspective in a very, very good way. And he's kind of time and place of communication. So he's incredibly patient, and that quality in him has served him very, very well. And he's always wanted this to be on my terms. That's been the other real key to this, is I've never once felt like I was kink dispensing to him. Like I was just playing a part in his fantasy. It was, if I don't want to do it for myself, then we're not doing it. But if what I want to do aligns up with his fantasy, and because he's told me his fantasies and he's shared his fantasies, and then those have become hot to me, and a lot of those I've ended up. But a lot of times it took conversations about, okay, well, why do you like that? Why are you into this? And then it was, oh, you know the meme where, you know, you're like, oh, what is this? Oh, fuck, I'm into it. Like, it's that.
Yeah, I have that good. With literally everything. Oh, that looks fun. Oh, that looks fun. Let's try that.
May I share a little anecdote? So in the lines of sort of the, like, seeing a kink thing that you're interested in, but, like, not being able to bring it, you know. So our friend Hopeful here had shared a picture on the Twitter X machine, and apparently there was an anal hook connected to a neck collar sort of thing.
So glad you brought that up. This is the best.
I shared that with the lovely Mrs. Dulce. I said, hey, what do you think about this, right? And she looks at it and she goes, interesting. Do you want that? I was like, well, I mean, if you want to try it, yeah. And she's like, no, Do you consent? Well, I mean, if you're into it. And then she's like, I said, she told me, she's like, do you consent?
Trust me. Say yes.
I said yes. I said yes.
Love it.
She made me watch a movie in that thing.
I was at a play party, and this is where the bi situational comes in. I was in a swinger style play party, and this one lovely lady that was there, she and I had kind of a connection and an attraction. I ended up using my strap-on on her. And of course, that is not common at a lifestyle swinger party where woman breaks out a strap-on and starts fucking another woman. That doesn't happen. So next thing I look up, there's a crowd of about 10 people in the room. And another woman saw me fucking her with this and was like, I'm kind of curious. I'm kind of curious. And, you know, somebody else said, oh, just say yes. And so she's just like, oh, fuck it. I'll give it a shot. So, you know, I cleaned my dick off, I changed the condom off my strap on and started fucking her. And the way that this harness worked was I could penetrate her while someone got behind me and penetrated me. So I ended up having an impromptu MFF at this party. And at the end of the day, she's like, well, lesson learned. Just say yes.
That's a nice story. That's a nice story.
I wasn't laughing at you midway through that. I was just like, po' boys, like jaw fell off the floor and rolled out down the street.
You said somebody could come up behind you and Poe's mouth turned into an O.
Well, just to be clear, I invited the person to come behind me. They didn't just show up and be like, surprise, penis. that would not have gone down.
We think you're pretty good at protecting yourself, man. No question.
No, that's if we were talking about some sound bites, I reckon we may have got one or two in there. That's cool. It's well done.
Should we point out to everybody at these parties and stuff like that, you know, ask. There's no there's no place. Surprise penises are never good. I mean, honestly.
Not in a picture?
Surprise.
Not in person?
Honestly, that just needs to be just, well, no. Surprise penises are never good. It needs to be on a t-shirt.
Yeah. We're gonna start talking about merch. So
yeah,
that reminds me of the Dexter meme where the guy comes out, it's like, surprise, motherfucker, just have it be a walking penis. Like, surprise, motherfucker. But see, they're never good. They're never good.
No.
This is brilliant. Absolutely.
Sometimes for Tatiana, even the expected penis isn't that big a thrill.
Yeah, well, at the moment, for me, it's
just not that big.
I can honestly say mine has never surprised anyone in the way that I would have liked for it to.
Oh, that's good. A question that I had, sorry, just to bring everything back on track, but this is Scream. The primal aspect, that piques my curiosity because there appears to be, you know, really something interesting about that from primal prey and that sort of thing. I find it very fascinating. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that for us?
So, you know, it's one of those things where it's very similar to cuckolding in that if you ask 100 different primals, you're going to get 100 different definitions. The guy who, one of my playmates who actually took me to my first kink dungeon and kind of got me really immersed in the kink scene at a dungeon level, because I'd already been doing kink impact and various forms of bondage with my husband. He took me to my first dungeon so I could see kink in the world, you know, and fetish and all of that kind of stuff. And I was kid in the candy shop, like eyes everywhere going, I can have all of these. It was lovely. He's the one who really kind of introduced me to the concept of being primal, because that is what he identifies as. And I had always kind of thought of myself more as a switch, where, and a lot of that came from misconceptions of what dominance and submission really is. So a lot of times I was just like, oh, I must be a submissive in the bedroom because I like rough sex. I like being thrown around. I like, you know, that kind of just raw power feeling. But I didn't really feel submissive in my brain. So it was more of like just I like the body feeling, but I couldn't separate the body feeling from the brain feeling. I didn't know what that meant. So I was like, oh, I must be submissive when I'm being sexual with my partners. And, you know, I'm very dominant with my husband. So I'm like, oh, I must be a switch. That just must be what it is. And then he defined primal, and I'll actually read off his definition because he's a kink educator and he has a meme that I know I've shared with Po'Boy before. He describes it as a primal is someone whose sexual preference, identity, or orientation is neither consistently dominant nor submissive, but can be either depending upon the environment, situation, and personal dynamic with others. Similar to a switch, this type of dynamic is also versatile. However, primals usually engage in a conscious or unconscious struggle for dominance. The struggle can occur on a physical, a psychological, or sexual chemistry level. It's quite common that primals identify with animalistic aspects and traits in their relationships and sexuality. So you see a lot of different imagery a lot of times in kink spaces, and it's not just like furries. These aren't like furries, and love the furry world. That's an amazing group of people. But primals, they're not necessarily dressing up in fur costumes with a fursona, mm-hmm. You know? They might be. It's a beautiful blend of sexuality. But a lot of primals may just say, you know, I take on the energy of a specific animal trait. So like the person who introduced me to this, he was very wolfish. So it's like pack leader mentality kind of thing. I know one primal who identifies more as like a leopard or a panther. You know, so he has that kind of sleek cat-like feel. And you know, a lot of primal preys, you'll see them kind of more identify as like kitty or something like that.
Puppy play.
Or puppy play. Puppy play is different. Puppy play is specifically pup play. So kind of that is a very playful, you know, you hear about golden retriever energy. Yeah. This is just like golden retriever energy on speed, you know?
Like, can you clarify something for me? You said that being a primal is like a fight for dominance.
Yeah.
Is it like a wrestling match during the event?
Mm-hmm. Can be. Yeah, it can be. I have one particular playmate that I've played with for a very long time since I've been in the lifestyle. He's really, really amazing. And he and I, every sexual encounter ends up being having some aspect of the struggle for dominance between the two of us. And it's usually, it just ends up, it flows very naturally sometimes, where I'm kind of a little happier to take more of a prey role. And then it's kind of something in my head switches and I'm like, oh no, motherfucker, it's your turn now, you know? And but even if we try and do like, oh, let's just have a slow and sensual session tonight. No, we end up like wrestling and biting and clawing, and it never ends. It's never completely. So there's always ends up being either a physical struggle or a kind of mental psychological struggle between the two of us. It's just always kind of, it's two primals going at it. And it can be at the drop of a dime. When you have that sexual chemistry and that primal energy with someone, it can flare off.
Well, we're definitely now all sweating a little. That's not. Could you say that? Could you tell that story again, just a little slower?
Well, so there was one time that I was at the kink dungeon that this other partner, the primal guy, had invited me to. So primals tend to attract primals. So I have a lot of primal partners. One of the other women at the dungeon, she and I, we got to talking about like our learning about primal and being primal and stuff. And she's just like, oh, I'm primal. And I'm like, something happened. And next thing I know, we were just locked eyes with one another. And next thing I know, the two of us are grappling and wrestling on the floor. You know, it came like, you want to go? Okay, let's go. And then we're grappling and we're wrestling and we're trying to pin the other one. And it was sexual, but it was not. It was a wrestling, grappling for dominance for each of us. And we were both pretty evenly matched. And I remember at one point just kind of pinning her. And then she went in full primal mode where she didn't have any awareness of her surroundings. And we'd rolled over near a glass cabinet. And I looked up and saw the glass cabinet. And I'm like, oh, shit, she's going to break that cabinet. And so I ended up like just flipping her on her back and rolling us away from the cabinet. And I was a little less in primal space, that I was aware of my situation a little bit more. And then as soon as it started, it just like that click, it kind of ended. And we stood up, laughed, hugged one another. Everybody else kind of looked around like, what the fuck was that? And the dungeon mistress, the person who owns the dungeon, just goes, fucking primals, and walks away.
That's right.
It's rare that kind of thing happens. It's usually if you know that you're in a safe space where that kind of behavior is accepted. I don't think I would do that the same way. That was when I was a baby kinkster, and so I would be far more careful about consent and creating a scene and creating an opportunity and knowing where everybody's boundaries were. It was an impromptu kink scene with almost no negotiation. So now looking back on that, I don't know that I would behave in the same way. I tend to lock all of that down pretty hard because there is the opportunity for something to go wrong. Whether that says more about what I've learned or a higher level of anxiety in me, I don't know. But I'm a little bit more aware of making sure that we set the parameters of the play box before we play.
Yeah, communication and consent is two of the things that we talk about on this show all the time. You have to communicate with your partner. If you're not able to tell them what you want, they're not able to give you what you need.
And we had consent. I mean, both of us said, you know, do you want to go? Okay, let's go. Do you want to wrestle? Okay, let's wrestle. And we did. So we had the consent, the basic consent to do that. But we didn't go through the, are there any areas off limits? What do we need to do for aftercare? You know, any medical things I should be aware of? Like, we didn't go through, I think we hit like really quick bullet points, but it was very much a kind of impromptu thing.
It was primal.
And I think it would have been more detailed. It would have been more careful. We took the chemistry that we were having, and it was very palatable chemistry. And we took and we did a lot of nonverbal communication. It was a lot of eye contact. And I think there was that visual check-in. I mean, if her eyes had widened or looked scared, or if she'd gotten a look on her face that looked like anything other than an enthusiastic yes, I would have broken away. But she was in full primal space and she was on go time. It was gonna stop when I pinned her.
I'm gonna win no matter what.
I was so kind of enamored that I didn't remember. Did you pin her?
Yes.
Awesome. Okay. So this brings up something that I think I have heard you say before, is that boundaries are gifts.
I say that all the time. Yeah. Boundaries are the gifts that we can give our partners to create a safe space to play in. That's what they are. Because if you tell someone your boundaries and you know they're going to honor your boundaries, you're going to feel safer to kind of let loose and to be able to feel like your no has meaning in a space. And that goes for guys as well as girls, you know, or any couple, you know. So I keep thinking in a cis hetero kind of way because that's typically who I try to play with, but it goes for anybody. Knowing someone else's boundaries and having them communicate to you means you know you're not going to accidentally cross a line. You'll know to avoid that. You're not going to accidentally, because giving everybody the benefit of doubt, having assumption of positive intent, no one goes into an encounter you know, ideally, if you've had a communication, you've had a conversation, you've had the talk kind of thing, you don't go into that conversation going, I want to see how I can fuck this person up sexually. I mean, that's a predator who goes in and does that. But most people that want to have a genuine connection, whether it's sexual, kink, or otherwise, if you break your toys, you can't play with your toys. You want your toys to have a good time. You want your partners to have a good time. You always want to walk away. And so knowing what somebody's triggers might be, and it could be as simple as don't put your hand on the back of my head when I'm going down on you. Mm-hmm. That's one of mine. I don't like someone to, I don't mind a hand on my head, but I don't like pressure. Mm-hmm. Because I had, when I was in high school, I had guys who didn't know any better. Because our sex education in this country sucks, and they don't know about boundaries and how to communicate and how to say, you know, would you go down on me? And they might just try and push my head down, and I would have to back up because immediately that gave me the ick and be like, no, this is over. We're done now.
Can I ask from the perspective of, call it so from a BDSM perspective or from an impact play perspective, something along that lines, mm-hmm. Finding the, you know, a lot of people, I think, kind of like to go to a boundary, or they like to get to a limit of what they can take, or how much they, how much, mm-hmm. you know, how hard they want to be hit, or any of those sorts of things. So I don't know whether I would necessarily classify those as boundaries, but they're sort of limits on what they can do. And it whether or not that's not really crossing a boundary, but it's possibly pushing the limits is maybe a way of thinking of that.
Yeah, well, in kink, they talk about soft limits and hard limits. Soft limits tend to be things that you, it's not a harm and firm no. It's dependent upon the setup. It's dependent upon the communication. It's depending upon the situation and how you may feel. So, like, take impact, for example. Someone might say, canes are a hard limit. I'm not going to do any kind of canes. Or they might say dragon tails or whips are a hard limit. But canes are a soft limit because they might be used to floggers and paddles, but they haven't experienced a caning and they're curious about it. But they don't want marks. They don't necessarily want the intense kind of caning marks that they've seen on somebody else. They've never experienced it. So they're curious. They want to try it, but they don't. You know, it's not a, oh, fuck, I'm not doing that. It's more of a, oh, let me see how the rest of the scene goes and see if it's something I want to explore. So you can put that in a soft limit kind of thing and talk about like, okay, well, if you've never had caning before, here's how I might introduce caning to you. Soft taps. You tell me how it's going. We'll find your yellow, the point where you feel like that's about as much sensation as you want to take. And anything over that is too much sensation. Because really, people talk about pain and they get really scared of kind of impact and kink and BDSM because they're like, I don't want pain. Well, yes and no, because everybody's had that sensation of picking a scab that really itches. Mm. And it hurts like hell, but it also feels really good when you pick that itching scab off. And so that is pain that feels good. And people know what that sensation is like. People, a lot of times, you know, can say, I don't want pain in my sex. I'm like, dude, I just watched your ass get slapped 10 times by that guy when you were riding his dick. Don't tell me you don't like pain during sex, you know? It's like, you like a little something, you know? So it's more of like, but it's the idea of going in, but that's the whole point. You don't go into a situation and go, I'm going to fuck someone up. Like, no, you don't. You go and say, I want to create a sensory experience where your senses are overwhelmed to what you're comfortable with. And then maybe see if you're okay with doing so. Can we find if you can go a little beyond that? If you're wanting to explore that today. But it's the going beyond where your normal threshold is, that's, you have to get a yes before you just take someone there.
As a spanking enthusiast, I can say this. It's okay to fear the king.
Well, my husband has a saying, and he's gotten it from other spanking things. And it's like, what is it? How does it go? I'm going to fuck this up. It's like the spanking doesn't start until you want it to end, kind of thing. And it's like, then it starts, you know, because up until then, it's just enjoyable sensation. It's not a spanking. But if you want the spanking, then you have to be like, I kind of wouldn't like this to end. But then you go past that, and you're later on, you're craving it, and you're like, yes. But there's that's where you hit that soft limit, and you keep going, and you don't get to that hard limit. You get to the point where you're right before it, and then you stop.
See, this is something that I've because I'm very inexperienced with any of this sort of stuff, but do certainly have an inquisitive mind from the perspective of spanking and that mm-hmm. area. But the way that Eve, my wife, sees it is just, she's like, well, if you've done something bad or I've asked you to do something, you didn't do it, and then you want me to give you a spanking, well, that's, you want that. So I'm not going to give you that because you've done something bad. And I'm like, but it's... but I think it's probably...
Let me just tell you, Austin, I mean this from the bottom of my heart. As a person who is experienced in punishment for uncompleted tasks, there are several different kinds of spankings, and there are definitely the spankings that you want. There are most certainly the spankings that you don't. There are most certainly the spankings that you don't. Well, and I work very hard not to disappoint Tatiana because I don't like screaming.
Well, hopeful, I think you're describing the difference between punishment and
amen,
punishment.
Ma'am. 100%.
Punishment. Can someone hashtag that?
Punishment, you know, punishment is the fun spankings. It's the kinky spankings. It's the impact play that you set up and you try and get to, you know, those lovely purple bruises on someone's ass. It's so
punishment is when she rubs your balls while she's doing it. Punishment is when she smacks your balls while she's doing it. I don't know how else to describe it, but that's it.
I can't fit that on a t-shirt. Sorry.
That's amazing.
That's good. Punishment on the front and punishment on the back.
There you go.
If I could pivot just for a second, and Kay, by the way, it's great being with you. Kay and I and her husband and Sarah got to know each other back during the pandemic on a Discord that we were all part of, and it was it was keeping our sanity and kind of preserving our intellect in some ways, because that was a really weird time. But you know, you're in a room full of cucks here today, and I wonder if you could speak to how is it that BDSM, some aspects of it at least, go hand in glove. Oftentimes, not every time, because as we always say, everybody's different and there's no wrong way. But it seems that the power dynamic of cuckolding oftentimes leads into some enjoyment of BDSM. Can you speak to that a little bit in your all's experience?
Look, the Venn diagram between kink and cuckolding is, it's a pretty big overlap. You know, for some people, it's a circle. And for some people, it's not. But if you think about cuckolding in general, cuckolding is a form of sexual power exchange. Whether you're looking at it as a scene that you play out or a relationship that you live, either way, it's going to be a power exchange. You are willingly, if you're just doing a cuckolding scene and the rest of your marriage and stuff is fine, you know, typical from the outside, you know, Ozzy and Harriet kind of thing, then in those cuckolding scenes, the cuckold is willingly giving their sexual power to their cuckoldress to command, and then she gets to do with it what she wants, whether that is then turn and give it to their third partner, their playmate, and to put herself in a power exchange as well. And whether or not they want to invite the third person to be part of that power exchange, you know, that's all negotiated. And if you want to do that as a scene, then you negotiate that for the scene. But if you're living that cuckolding life, if you're doing it as a, in our sexual relationship, we are sexually power exchange 24/7, then again, it's all about power. So that is essentially what a lot of kink and, you know, specifically BDSM is. It's BDSM is three different types of power exchange. You've got bondage and discipline. You've got dominance and submission, and you've got, you know, sadism and masochism. So that's what the letters BDSM stand for. So all of those are levels of power exchange, and whether that power is physical, like with bondage and discipline, whether it is mental with dominance and submission, or whether it can be like physical and emotional with sadism and masochism, you know, you've still got these power exchanges that are happening. And so it doesn't surprise me at all to see that there's a crossover with BDSM and cuckolding, because it's all power exchange.
My take on that too, Hubs, is that in a vanilla relationship, so call it a monogamous relationship, and in this a sort of relationship where there isn't really even the discussion necessarily about power exchange. There isn't that, you're going to, you know, you're the more dominant person. So, you know, it just doesn't even seem to happen, even though there will be this natural flow in of whether or not the you know, the wife is more dominant or the husband's more dominant, whatever it happens to be. I think when we get into cuckolding, we hand it over, and it becomes very clear about what it is that our intentions and how we feel about the power exchange. And I think then that naturally just goes, okay, well on an expansion to that, how else would I like it to be? What else would you like? What would you prefer that I did? How would you, you know, this is something I would like you to do. You know, we just extend from actually having a real conversation about it.
Oh, so I can tell you that, you know, Tatiana and I took a long break for real life reasons. And when we were coming back into it quite a few months ago now, she was talking about what our dynamic would look like. We had been 24/7, then we were back to vanilla for a while for some important reasons. And when we were moving back into our kink life, she was saying, I don't know if I want to do 24/7. Sometimes I'd like us to just be us. And the conversation from there, what it evolved to was a basic discussion of her natural dominance and my natural submission to her, and whether we wanted it to be 24/7 or not, it was going to be, because that's who we are as a couple. That's who she is as a human. That's who I am as a human. And it was important to me that we have that conversation and that we both respect our roles, because that's who we are.
Yeah, but I think you can have a lot of pressure when you intentionally say we're going to be in a 24/7 power exchange, that there can end up being this feeling like there's a lot of responsibility on the part of the dom. Mm. Like, now I have to make all decisions, I have to do all the stuff. And it's like, you know what, that it can be exhausting. And so if you're looking...
And you talk about those things. So there's, you know, it's one of the things that I think that this show is supposed to be about, Kay, is what this really looks like. And I will tell you flat out, and I mean it, we are 24/7 power exchange. I've been in a cage for almost a week. It'll be a week. I'm counting the hours now.
Stop thinking about it, man. Just stop talking about it.
It's 24/7, brother. That's when that is locked up. It is 24/7. But still, we have our vanilla interactions. We have our conversations. We talk about the bills. This morning, I'm not going down on her. I'm going down on a toilet. Like, that's, I have to go clean the bathroom. It is.
That was a visual I didn't need to have.
Let me rephrase that. I'm not going to clean her. I'm going to clean the bathroom. Is that better?
Yes, that's much better.
Yeah, I'm putting the first one in. I feel like that's slightly. That's first take.
So I wanted to kind of go back. Those three types of power exchanges, I was misquoting, and I found my notes from back when I did a talk about Power Exchange, but I was misquoting Stephanie Gerlich, who is an amazing author, and she wrote The Leather Couch, The Clinical Practice with Kinky Clients, and she talks about the three main types of power exchange and how they exist on the spectrum, and the bondage and discipline is an exchange of control, dominance and submission is an exchange of authority, and sadism and masochism is an exchange of sensation. And I fucked that up when I talked about it. But that's she puts it much better than I do, and I want to make sure I kind of gave credit to that. But you were talking about like how vanilla there's these kind of unspoken things of power exchange, and it's like, of course there is, because we've heard all the phrases about them as well. Everybody's heard happy wife, happy life. Mm-hmm. There's that wonderful scene in My Big Fat Greek Wedding when she's like, you know, dad, he's the head of the household, and she's like, yes, but the mother, she is the neck, and she can turn the head anywhere she wants, you know. And it's like, yeah, okay, that's the unspoken power exchanges. Yeah. And you know, they can also cause problems when you start looking at the idea of expectations and uncleared expectations. You know, a lot of people may grow up in a household that is the I cook, you clean. Mm. And so there's this expectation, unspoken expectation of, well, I'm going to cook, so therefore you're expected to clean up. And then if their partner doesn't get up and clean without being told to, because they don't know that this is the expectation, then the fact that they're not fulfilling an expectation that they don't know about can breed resentment. What codifying power exchanges or being intentional about going into kind of power exchanges is that you can have all of those lovely conversations. You don't have to be in a power exchange to have a conversation like that. I think that when you're in an intentional power exchange, you start to examine all of those little areas of power exchange. And then you become very clear with your communication and your expectations of each other, whether it's whoever is topping or in charge or dominant, whoever is submissive. You know, it's like, no, I'm expecting you to tell me this, or I'm expecting you to look and open your eyes and do this. So
one of the things that she requires me to do is file my nails for specific things that she likes. And last night, we're recording this on a Saturday morning. Last night was Friday night, and I was filing my nails while we were watching TV. And I looked at her and I said, it's Friday night, you never know, I'm just getting ready. And she looked at me and she said, you should always be ready. And those are the expectations that I appreciate and understand.
Mm-hmm. I love that woman. She's so good.
She's amazing.
I think that that's one of the things I've really learned from this, you know, sort of being in the lifestyle spaces and everything, is really how to like question yourself about what are the expectations in your head, and have those ever been brought out from your head to your mouth and stuff. And that's when we talk about communication in the lifestyle, I think that's one of the things that we learn is how to, you know, how to open your mouth and let the words vocalize. Come out better, which
you have to be vulnerable.
Yeah, you do.
And I do. I think you put it really well. Hopefully you have to be vulnerable, because it can be really hard to say what you want, because what if they reject you because of what you want? Mm-hmm. Or what if you fucking get it?
He says he pulled up the anal hook.
I'm just going to go back to that spanking conversation. Maybe I'll just retract that. Yeah, that's fine.
That's where I see a lot of mismatch in kind of cuckolding, and people talking about wanting to get into cuckolding is they're looking at it necessarily from their perspective, you know, what their fantasy looks like. And so then when the reality doesn't match your fantasy, oh shit, this isn't what I wanted. This isn't how it's supposed to be. And it's like, well, no, you've involved another human being with their agency and their things. So when you want a cuckolding relationship, do you want them to play out your fantasy the way that you want it to be? Or do you want to truly give up your power and have her make her decisions, even if they don't align with yours? So what is it that you really want? if you just want a fantasy role play, there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. And you can set that up and you can ask for that. That's where I kind of say cuckolding is both a kink and a relationship. I want to have this experience as an experience, but the scene that plays out in your head is always going to play out in exactly the way that you want to, because you're in charge of the scene. When you get out into the real world, the humans don't go to their mark. You know, they don't look at the camera on cue. You've got bloopers.
That's a fact. It's one thing. And one of the, again, another one of the themes of our show is the difference between pornographic cuckolding, what shows up on the porn, and what is real life.
Yeah, I'm hit or miss on shitting on porn.
Well, listen, we all like it, and there are certainly good representations, especially in the creator-made stuff, the OnlyFans and the Loyal Fans, those people who are clearly doing it the way they want to. No one's shitting on porn, but there are some really, really bad porn clips out there too.
Oh yeah. Yeah, 100%. I mean, there's bad representations of just about anything out there. To me, the conversations are always going to be more interesting.
One of our earlier episodes was really about comparing reality to porn, and it's not really a fair, you know, I suppose a fair comparison. But the point is about taking what was seen as being a fantasy, maybe derived from mm-hmm. porn. And taking it off a flat screen on a computer
in a 3-minute clip,
and turning it into a full on reality, it is never. Well, you're not even going to want it to be that, really. It may be something. It's going to be something completely different if you're.
Someone's going to clean the bathroom.
As a relationship, yeah. If you want to live it as a relationship, as what you're saying though, as a scene and as a role play. Yeah, that's actually a stopgap I hadn't really even considered all that much. So I appreciate that perspective.
Oh, you're welcome. No, Dr. David Lay has this great saying that, we have such shitty sex education that a lot of people get their sex education from porn. Mm. And he's like, learning your sex education from porn is like learning to drive by watching the Fast and Furious movies. You're watching something that is built purely for entertainment, and these are athletes performing at a sexual level that most of us cannot do. And like, I don't bend that way, nor do I want to bend that way. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with taking inspiration from porn and feeding it into your own fantasy. I mean, let's face it, shower sex looks amazing on screens. That's why they put it in TV shows and movies and all that stuff. But I fucking hate shower sex.
Yeah.
If I'm in the shower with someone who's a little bit taller than me, I have water splashing right in my eyes. And then if I'm going to get smacked up, you know, shower towel is not very cushioning and forgiving. So you're getting smushed up against the shower towel and you're just kind of like, well, this doesn't feel good. And then you're worried that you're going to fall and break a hip. No, that's not good.
There's so much of that though, right?
Water is the shittiest lube ever.
It's like awful. The swimming pool, you know? The hot tub. You know, like plain bathrooms, beaches, like who wants sand in there, man? Come on. I mean, it's like...
Tatiana and I played in the bathroom last night, Oz, and first I took a shower and she stood on the outside, and then she took a shower and I stood on the outside. We were not in the shower together because it's just too hard.
It's too difficult, but does it look amazing on camera? Amen, does sister. It look Amen, so sister. Good and important? Like, yes, it does, because that's the fantasy that you're being sold. Mm. But the reality is water's not a good lube. You get water, you know, getting sprayed water in your eyes and slipping in the bathtub and falling is not sexy. I mean, anybody can, you know.
Wet and soapy makes a good picture, though. It just does.
It does. Mm. So I love showers for foreplay. I love showers for aftercare. But if we're going to have penetrative sex, we don't need water washing away all of the lube. We need water washing away all of the squirt and lube and cum afterwards.
After.
That's a good idea.
Wow. So this, we have had a wonderful conversation with you, Mistress Kay, and I just totally appreciate you taking a little bit of time to talk to us. I would like to point out that You're kind of prominent on the Moan app, which is an audio discussion app for kind of all things sexual and interesting. And you do at least, I know, monthly kind of talks on there, visits on there, plus some stuff like Sluts Who Change the World, which is amazing during Women's Month and everything. So, and you've given us like so much good stuff to think about.
Thank you, Mr. K, for coming on. Really appreciate it. And yeah, there's been so many things where great to open up one's mind a little bit more about subjects. Sometimes you think, oh, this is where I used to be, and now this is where I'm at. And then you actually realize it's actually quite a bit in between that maybe you've skipped over, or maybe you've made decisions about things that you actually haven't considered. So I really appreciate the perspective. Thanks for coming on.
No, you're welcome.
Kay, it's so great to be with you. And there's so much more that we could and that I would love to talk about with you. So we hope that maybe you'll come back again sometime and visit with us. But thanks so much for being here today.
Absolutely.
Just a wonderful conversation. And thank you so much for sharing so openly about your sexuality and who you are. I really enjoyed this very much, and I think our listeners will too.
Well, thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate them. I really appreciate it. I love what you guys are doing, kind of giving the perspective and maybe pulling back the veil on the idea of what is the fantasy that you see versus what is the reality and what are the challenges to living.
Real stories, real guests, real cucks. That's our motto, and we are trying to bring a level of reality to the sphere that is our lifestyle.
Well, it's wonderful, and I wish you all the best of luck. This was definitely a fun conversation. Thank you.
Before we wrap up today, we've had a fascinating conversation with Mistress Kay. I'd love to get y'all's final thoughts about what we talked about.
I will say that I literally don't know anyone who has the depth of knowledge and who is as willing to share as liberally as Kay does. I mean, she's absolutely incredible. She makes this lifestyle a study for herself. And in doing so, she's able to then be a terrific spokesperson on just such a wide variety of aspects of the lifestyle that just crosses all into all kinds of areas. I just respect her so much and really appreciated her taking the time to be with us today. She's amazing.
Yeah, I can really see her being a regular. There's just so much depth and so many topics that I think, whilst I recognize that we're really giving the cuckold perspective, but I think what is also one of the most primary messages is that we're working in unison with cuckoldresses, with these ladies. It's not them and us. It's we're all sort of doing this together. And I think if we're projecting from so many different perspectives as well as ours, and learning ourselves, and our audience is hopefully learning and seeing that we're also learning, and we don't know everything. And there's in fact, talking to Mr. K, it makes me feel like I actually don't know much at all. So it was really great, really great topic.
Asi, you're 100% correct. We're in this together with the women of the lifestyle and the bulls of the lifestyle. It's a triumvirate that needs representation. And one of the things we got into this for was to present the cuck side of things. I think whether we're talking to hot wives, and three of them this weekend, or bulls or other cucks, what we're doing is asking questions from the perspective of the cuck in a way that I don't think is being presented anywhere else at the moment. This conversation with her was exceptional. She is goddamned erudite. She speaks, and I can't help but listen. She opened Poe's mouth wider than I've ever seen it open before. As soon as we stopped talking to her, when we were walking around of the studio, the first thing out of my mouth was, hey, what are you doing next weekend? You want to come back and do that other episode we've been talking about? Because the conversation was fascinating.
Anytime that I'd get the chance to talk to her, hear Mistress K, or read her blog, I'm always trying to do that. I support her buy me a coffee thing and everything, because I think I want to encourage her to keep doing what she's doing. So much to think about from that one. I hope you've all enjoyed it. We appreciate you joining us. Any comments you want to make, please reach out to us. We're on Twitter. We've got our information in the show notes. You can email us. From the whole panel here at Cut My Life, take care, and we'll see you next time.